I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the 17th anniversary edition of the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our special guest this morning on Two Jewish is Jody Rudoran, the new editor of the national Jewish publication, The Forward. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. This is a very special morning here on Two Jewish. We are celebrating our 17th anniversary of the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends. It's more than a little hard to believe. We've been providing the very finest in Jewish radio experiences for 17 full years. And so, in celebration of 889 editions of Two Jewish dating back to August 2002, we're now officially ready for a champagne toast to get us going. A traditional anniversary toast, L'chaim, for 17 full years of everything Jewish and interesting, brought to you weekly right here on the radio. With only one single repeat episode, we finally had one about 13 months ago after a travel and medical emergency in Europe. Still pretty darned good, 17 years, one duplication. When we began Two Jewish 17 years ago, the goal was to reach out, entertain, and intrigue anyone and everyone interested in Jewish life, ethics, culture, contemporary events, history, Israel, music, film, books, food, art, holidays, humor, sports, as well as anything and everything else Jewish. Two Jewish was designed for Jews of all denominations and flavors and streams, of course, but it was also created to help people who aren't Jewish learn about and be inspired and influenced by the fabulous religion and culture of Judaism. By exploring all aspects of Jewish life and living without limiting ourselves to one movement or ethnic or national aspect, we here at Two Jewish hope to explain what Judaism really is in the 21st century. By the way, that was a much newer century when we started this show than it is now. That means explaining what Judaism has been for nearly 4,000 years and continues to be today and for the foreseeable future, as Fiddler on the Roof taught, tradition. On Two Jewish, we were going to explain and teach and celebrate and joke about Jewish tradition and make it referable to our discerning radio audience, broadly, with intelligence and humor. But a funny thing happened on the way to the airwaves. We discovered contemporary Jewish life is about much more than tradition. It's also consistently about innovation. New and exciting things happen everywhere in the Jewish world nearly all the time. Judaism is very much about the process of engaging a great tradition with the best of contemporary life on a constant basis. It is this dynamic process, the continuing evolution of our 3,800-year-old religion into something continually fresh and new, that lies at the heart of Jewish survival and ongoing development. And that has made creating Two Jewish each and every week for 17 years a continual surprise and an ongoing delight, 889 consecutive shows and counting. To play us in on this celebratory morning, here's a Shehechianu, the Jewish prayer for all good and new things, by Meyer Machtenberg, as sung by past Two Jewish guest, cantor Alberto Mizrahi. Blessed are you, God, who gives us life, sustains us, brings us to such a happy occasion.
Oh, Lord.
That was from The Western Winds, Abe Mizrahi singing the prayer thanking God for celebrations like this, our 17th anniversary of Too Jewish this morning. Our guest this morning, Jody Rudoran, is the brand new editor of a venerable and important publication, The Forward, a Jewish publishing institution since early in the 20th century, and in some ways the paper of record for a large sector of American Judaism for a very long time. Big changes have come to The Forward. Find out what they are and what's next from its new editor when we return in a moment here on the 17th anniversary edition of Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome Too Jewish, our guest this morning. Jody Rudoran is the new editor of The Forward, the venerable and I guess almost in some ways most authoritative Jewish publication in America. She's been a reporter and editor at the New York Times since 1998, associate managing editor, a variety of other roles, well-respected and rewarded newspaper person for a long time, and now taking the helm of The Forward. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. This is really a period of tremendous transition in delivering news across the board. Can you tell us a little bit about where The Forward fits into that whole picture now?
Absolutely. I mean, I totally agree. There's a real crisis and opportunity in the journalism world as we adjust to the digital opportunity, and what it means that people are getting news along with all this other content in the palm of their hands on their phones. The Forward made an incredibly bold move earlier this spring of ending print entirely and really embracing the idea of the digital moment. And now the question is, what are we going to be in that digital future?
The digital future is actually the digital present, I think. You're right about that. I have a big stack of magazines that I haven't opened, and yet I check my news feed every morning for an hour, like everybody else. The Forward originally began as a Yiddish publication, kind of socialist, I would say, probably in its orientation. It's what a lot of our grandparents read. It's become something quite different. Tell us sort of where it is editorially in your view right now.
I think The Forward has a grand tradition of independent, fearless journalism, investigative accountability journalism, and provocative opinion writing, and really probing cutting-edge culture coverage. We're going to continue all of those things and build on them to really try to create a platform for civil discourse and for conversation that really helps American Jews kind of explore their own story and understand their own story in the most broadest possible way and the most nuanced possible way.
There's been a move in news away from news into, I don't know how to describe it exactly. I would call it in Hebrew, Lashon Hara, you know, everything somehow feels like gossip now when you see it. Every headline seems to scream something. The kind of Twitterization of news. Now, you've been at the New York Times, which is, you know, kind of the venerable publication of record, which takes a very different approach. How do you see the balance today?
I hear what you're saying, but I actually think we're a little ahead of that. I feel like I was really afraid of that trend of everything becoming screaming and gossipy and empty clicks. And I feel like in the last couple of years, we've seen a real outpouring of support for high quality, independent, deeply reported, fact-based journalism. And I think that The Forward fits in that tradition right alongside the New York Times. I do think that we want to make sure that we use the digital tools that we have to engage the audience in the journalism in new ways. And people have a lot to say about the news and about their own experiences. And capturing that and kind of marrying that up with independent, deeply reported journalism, I think is the promise of the future, is how we can, you know, engage voices and perspectives with the news itself.
We will continue this great conversation with Jody Rudoran, the new editor of The Forward, when we come back in just a moment here on Too Jewish. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills and northwest Tucson, celebrates its first services, classes, and events this summer and fall. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha is located at 7315 North Oracle Road, just north of Ina on the west side of Oracle. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us this Friday night, 7315 North Oracle Road, for Shabbat evening services at 6:30 p.m. with Saturday morning Torah study at 9 a.m. filled with bagels and lox and Torah, followed by Shabbat morning services at 10, all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Join us this Shabbat at 7315 North Oracle Road on the west side of Oracle, north of Ina. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha to attend services, our great religious school, Torah Tikes program, an incredible array of adult education academy courses, and for information about the coming Jewish High Holy Days, go to www.beitsimchatucson.org, Beitsimcha, Tucson, or call 520-276-5675, that's 276-5675, or go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me in the newest and fastest growing Jewish community in southern Arizona during its exciting beginning years. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and A. Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2jewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website, 2jewishradio.com, TOOJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts, top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking about the French Jewish community last week and the kind of combinations that have made it up, from the original quote-unquote French Jews to the Eastern Europeans who came over, many in the north of France, for citizenship and economic opportunity. And then we started to talk a little bit about the large influx of North African Jews, Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, and so on, and that community last week. So maybe we can continue to explore that.
I very much enjoy that. We almost forgot one wave that's fairly important, which is in the immediate aftermath of World War II, there were many refugees from countries that had been even more directly affected by the Holocaust than France.
Right.
And a lot of them came to settle in France permanently, and some just as a transit stop on their way to Canada or the U.S. or Israel or other places.
But I think of Elie Wiesel jumps to mind immediately from Romania.
Right.
You know, many,
and,
many
he was from Hungary. I mean, people...
Romania, actually, yeah. That's right.
Well, the Hungarian part
of Romania. Right, sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, but lots of non-Poles
right.
from all sorts of countries in Central and Eastern Europe ended up in France in a very short period of time. I would say between like 1945 and 1950.
Yeah, Paul Celan. That's right. A lot of great figures, actually.
But the large number, and probably the majority of Jews in France today, are from former French colonies or protectorates or whatever they were called in North Africa, specifically Morocco, Algeria, and Tunisia. And each of those communities has very distinctive features, tunes, foods, ways of observing the holidays, et cetera, et cetera. So it's important to make these distinctions because in the largest communities, like in Paris, for example, there's not a North African community per se. There's a Moroccan community, a Tunisian community, and an Algerian community, and people tend to socialize and marry and celebrate simchas and other family events within that much narrower community. So not only is there not, in that sense, a French Jewish community, there's not even a North African Jewish community. There's a Tunisian community, a Moroccan community, and an Algerian community. The feelings that these people have towards France and towards their former countries vary enormously. Some are like, thank God we're in France. And others are, oh, I really miss the good old days in Morocco where we had servants and blah, blah, blah. So even within these micro communities of the Tunisians, the Moroccans, and the Algerians, there's a huge amount of individual variation in how they feel about their identities, how they define themselves, how they feel about being French, how they feel about their former places of residence, et cetera, et cetera. So when we sort of monolithically talk about the French Jewish community, in many ways, it's a non sequitur. Yes, there are organizations that are overarching, and part of that is determined by the French Constitution. There's the consistoire, which is like every person affiliated with any religion in France pays taxes to some central organ of that religion, in addition to the taxes they pay to the state, because the state is separated from not only the church, but from any church. It is a lay state. It's a lay republic. So you have to fund these communities some way, and that's how they do it.
Very interesting, and obviously such a different model from what we're used to in the States. Thanks, Tom. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
The Jewish holiday cycle is full of days of celebration and affirmation, times of rejoicing, lovely songs and rituals, but this time of year our holy days are more serious and a little sadder than usual. This coming Saturday night we'll commemorate Tisha B'Av, the ninth day of the month of Av on the Jewish calendar, an important day of fasting and mourning in our tradition. It's the anniversary of the day on which both the first and second temples in Jerusalem were destroyed, the greatest calamities our people has experienced, well, ever did until the Holocaust. This is also the anniversary of the fall of Beitar at the end of the Bar Kokhba revolt in the year 135 and the expulsion of the Jews of Spain by Ferdinand and Isabella in the year 1492. For observant Jews of all denominations, Tisha B'Av is a day of prayer, fasting, and introspection. We chant the beautiful, tremendously mournful book Eicha, Lamentations from the Bible. Eicha Yashev Avadon. It's on this day of Tisha B'Av that we recall the greatness of the temple and its annihilation at the hands first of the Babylonians in 586 BCE and then the Romans in 70 CE. While today Jerusalem's Jewish quarter has been rebuilt, there will always be a place in our hearts for the destroyed temple, which we honor as part of the observance of the ninth of Av. It begins this Saturday night at sunset. Join me at my synagogue, Congregation Beit Simcha, Saturday night at 8 p.m. We'll commemorate this sad but beautiful remembrance. Speaking of remembrance, we have sadness of a lighter, more musical sort still. Hal Prince, legendary Broadway producer, director of an array of incredible musicals that started with Pajama Game, continued with West Side Story and Fiddler on the Roof, and reached a commercial apex with Phantom of the Opera. Hal Prince died last week at the age of 91. He received a record 21 Tony Awards and a Kennedy Center honor. Hal Prince wrote about his family growing up. We were privileged upper middle lower rich class Jewish, both parents of German Jewish families who settled here soon after the Civil War. Prince was taken to the theater often as a kid. He was captivated by Orson Welles and Julius Caesar, deciding theater would be his career, avoiding his father's preference that he follow the family profession of stockbroker. Hal Prince wrote that Saturday matinees were part of a New York Jewish child's intellectual upbringing. In 1944, Prince enrolled at Penn to become a playwright, getting his B.A. in 1948, moving back to New York, but he found no takers for his new plays. But Hal Prince did find a job with director George Abbott, a Broadway legend whose career started in the early 20th century. While working days in Abbott's office running the switchboard, Prince spent nights as an assistant stage manager on Abbott's productions. After 2 years away in the Army, he came back to New York and was made an assistant stage manager in 1952 on the new musical Abbott was directing, Wonderful Town. During the run of the show, Prince and Robert Griffith, Wonderful Town's stage manager, Abbott's chief assistant, decided to become producing partners. They chose for their first project a musical called 7 Cents. Well, it wasn't yet a musical. It was Richard Bissell's comic novel about a strike at a pajama factory. Hal Prince and Griffith hired the pop songwriting team of Richard Adler and Jerry Rice to compose the score, asked Bissell to write a libretto, engaged an aspiring young choreographer, Bob Fosse, to work out the dance routines. They convinced George Abbott to direct. Prince and Griffith then raised money for the show, called it The Pajama Game. They got the money from 161 different backers, including several Wonderful Town chorus members who invested small sums. Hal Prince always raised money from angels, a process parodied beautifully by Zero Mostel in the movie The Producers.
Hey there, you with the stars in your eyes. Love never made a fool of you. You used to be too wise. Hey there. Flying cloud, though she won't throw a crumb to you, you think someday she'll come to you. Better forget her, her with her nose in the air.
Their new show opened on Broadway with little fanfare in May of 1954, but The Pajama Game garnered rave reviews and won a Tony Award for Best Musical. It ran for over 1,000 successful performances.
Something bigger. You gotta have heart. All you really need is heart. When the odds are saying you'll never win, that's when the grin should start. You gotta have hope. Mustn't sit around and mope. Nothing's half as bad as it may appear. Wait till next year and hope.
Next, Prince and Griffith reteamed with Adler, Ross, Fosse, and Abbott on Damn Yankees, a musical about, well, baseball. Damn Yankees repeated the success of The Pajama Game. It ran for over 1,000 performances and also won the Tony Award for Best Musical. I had this absolutely charmed first couple of years. I really thought all you do is have hits. Never occurred to me it could be another way, Prince said. In the spring of 57, Prince and his partner continued on the hit-making track with West Side Story, the musical retelling of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet set in a New York City slum.
Tonight, tonight won't be just any night. Tonight there will be no morning star.
Opening in 1957, featuring music by Leonard Bernstein, lyrics by Stephen Sondheim, West Side Story received mixed reviews. Some critics liked its innovative blending of music and dance with a serious contemporary storyline, and others were put off by its dark, gritty attitude. Of course, West Side Story is now recognized as an all-time classic, perhaps the greatest musical ever. Hal Prince next brought to Broadway in 1959 the musical Fiorello, music by Jerry Bock, lyrics by Sheldon Harnick. They would later do Fiddler on the Roof with him. It received unanimous praise by critics. It won the Tony Award for Best Musical. Based on the early life of Fiorello LaGuardia, New York City's mayor in the 30s and 40s, it also won a Pulitzer Prize for Drama, a very rare honor for a musical. Hal Prince's hands-on involvement with the creative side of productions increased his interest in becoming a director. With the exception of She Loves Me, a minor success in 63, Prince's initial efforts at directing a Broadway musical were critical and commercial failures. So, Hal Prince continued to produce shows directed by others, and his magic touch remained. Prince's production of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, Stephen Sondheim's musical take on Roman farce, was a big hit in 1962.
Something familiar, something peculiar, something for everyone, a comedy tonight. Something appealing, something appalling, something for everyone, a comedy tonight. Nothing with kings, nothing with crowns.
And then Hal Prince produced...
If I were a rich man, all day long I'd biddy-biddy-bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. If I were a bitty bitty rich, idle man.
Fiddler on the Roof opened in 1964, music and lyrics by Bach and Harnack. Fiddler went on to a record-breaking run of 3,242 performances, ran basically forever. Originally seen by many as too ethnic to please most American audiences. Even Prince considered its potential limited. There are at least 3 million Jews in New York. I thought that should be enough to keep the show running for a couple of seasons. I never foresaw Fiddler would run the way it did, Prince said. It is now the most produced musical in the whole world.
Welcome and bienvenue. Welcome. Friend. Étranger, stranger, glücklich zu sehen, je suis enchanté, happy to see you, bleibe rest to stay, willkommen, bienvenue, welcome, im cabaret, au cabaret, du cabaret.
Then the musical Cabaret, a story of Berlin on the eve of the Nazi takeover, established Prince as an important director. Hal Prince also produced Cabaret. It opened in 66 and ran for over 1,100 performances. Cabaret won the Tony Award for Best Musical and earned Hal Prince his first Best Director award. Some of Hal Prince's most influential work as director came collaborating with Stephen Sondheim. Beginning in 1970 with Company, Prince and Sondheim brought the musical to higher levels of subtlety and sophistication. Dubbed concept musical by critics, this was the biggest innovation in the musical theater since the 1940s. The most ambitious of these follies was A Financial Disaster. It opened in 71, and despite a respectable run of 522 performances and a Best Director Tony Award for Prince, never came close to recouping its production costs.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you in midair. Send in the clowns. Isn't it bliss?
Hal Prince's other collaborations with Stephen Sondheim produced A Little Night Music in 1973, a wistful look at romantic relationships, their most commercially successful venture, Pacific Overtures in 76, about Western contact with Japan in the 19th century, and in 1979, Sweeney Todd, the bleak, melodramatic tale of the murdering demon Barbara Fleet Street. It won several Tony Awards, including Best Musical.
There was a barber and his wife, and she was beautiful. A foolish barber and his wife, she was his reason and his life.
and she was beautiful, and she was virtuous, and he was naive.
Apart from Sondheim, Hal Prince had major successes with On the 20th Century in 1978 and Evita in 79. Evita featured music by Andrew Lloyd Webber, lyrics by Tim Rice. Prince won yet another Tony for his direction of Evita.
Don't cry for me, Argentina. The truth is I never left you. All through my wild days, my mad existence, I kept my promise. Don't keep your distance.
A series of flops in the 80s seemed to mark the end of Hal Prince's spectacular success as Broadway producer and director, but his fortunes turned when he re-teamed with Andrew Lloyd Webber to direct The Phantom of the Opera in 1988. Phantom of the Opera earned Prince another Tony for Best Director and was wildly successful commercially, and I think it's still playing. Hal Prince also directed Kiss of the Spider-Woman in 1993, a revival of the classic 1927 musical Showboat in 94, a revival of Bernstein's Candide that reached Broadway in 97, and won him another Tony. In 1998, Hal Prince was back on Broadway with Parade, a work by composer-lyricist Jason Robert Brown about the 1915 Georgia lynching of Leo Frank, the celebrated case of the Jewish man whose unjust death sentence for rape and murder, which he did not commit, was commuted to life imprisonment by the governor before he was lynched. "I never stop working," Hal Prince said not long ago. Now, finally, he has. But his amazing legacy in musical theater will undoubtedly live on. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie new, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A Reform rabbi is having an argument with an Orthodox rabbi. He asks him, "Why don't you let men and women in your shul sit together like they do in my congregation?" And the Orthodox rabbi replies, "If you want to know the truth, I don't really mind them sitting together. The trouble is, I give sermons every week. I just can't have them sleeping together." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we begin reading Dvarim, Deuteronomy, final book of the Torah. The name Deuteronomy, a Latin word, means repeated text, but it's based in a Hebrew name for Deuteronomy, Mishneh Torah. This reflects the fact that the whole book of Devarim is made up of a few long sermons by Moses that recapitulate the events and commandments established over the previous three books. Not bad work for a guy like Moses who had a serious speech impediment. A word about language in Devarim seems appropriate, since the word Devarim itself means words. The Hebrew of the book is extraordinary, terse, strong, muscular in quality, conveying purpose and power. Deuteronomy has the unmistakable feel of a true literary masterpiece, and the language itself conveys Moses' message of God's explicit direction as clearly as any text in Torah. Sometimes the medium truly is the message, and so it proves to be here in Devarim. Deuteronomy begins at the end of the Israelites' journey to the borders of Canaan, the promised land, soon to become Israel. Moses informs the people of Israel he has now led them for 40 years, as though they could have forgotten that, and they've now come to a place and time of great importance. He then recalls the time when the Israelites were beginning to organize, and he appointed judges and magistrates to help them with the needs of the people. Moses remembers the instructions he gave those leaders. Be fair and absolutely even-handed in dispensing justice. Do not favor the rich. Do not favor the poor. Show no partiality. Simply seek that which is just and right in the world. This is the beginning of Moses' long orations, his last hurrah, so to speak. Although he is now, by biblical calculation, 120 years old, though his control over his people has waned, though his speech is tinged by the bitter knowledge he will not be permitted to enter the land of Israel, the promised land, still he teaches us yet again the greatest lesson. In this uncertain and often unjust world, we Jews must be pledged to create acts and systems of ethics and justice. What greater calling can any people have? Our guest this morning, Jody Rudoran, is the new editor of The Foreword, which began as a Yiddish language daily and has become a kind of national litmus test for Jewish identity and meaning in America. Find out what's next for The Foreword when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A Palestinian gunman crossed the border from southern Gaza into Israel and shot and injured three Israeli soldiers last week. A Palestinian terrorist was killed by other Israeli soldiers in the area. The IDF said it also fired on a Hamas military post with tank fire. Although the man was wearing a Hamas uniform, it is believed he acted alone. He also threw a grenade at the troops. Two of the Israeli soldiers were lightly injured and released. Their officer was moderately injured. The Palestinian soldier was identified as Fadi Abu Salah, whose disabled brother was killed by Israeli soldiers during protests back in May on the Gaza border. A record number of nearly 900 anti-Semitic incidents have been recorded in the United Kingdom for the first 6 months of 2019. The Community Security Trust, British Jewry's largest watchdog on anti-Semitism, released its January to June 2019 anti-Semitic incidents report last week. The 892 incidents reported in the first half of 2019 is the highest number recorded in that six-month period, and a 10% increase from the 810 incidents recorded during the same period a year ago. The highest monthly totals in the first half of 2019 were February and March, with 182 and 169 anti-Semitic incidents respectively. That occurred when issues relating to Jews and anti-Semitism in the Labor Party were prominent in the news and politics. There was a 37% increase in the number of violent anti-Semitic assaults to 85 in the 6 months of 2019. That's up from 62 in England in the first 6 months of 2018. Almost two-thirds of the 892 anti-Semitic incidents were recorded in Greater London and Greater Manchester, the two largest Jewish communities in the UK. And that's the Too Jewish news of Jews round the world. We welcome back to Too Jewish, the new editor of The Foreword, Jody Rudoran. She's been at the New York Times for a long time, had a very distinguished career in journalism, and takes the helm of the flagship Jewish publication in America. I think that's actually probably correct. The Foreword has an enormous world to cover in covering Judaism. People can now access news about Israel very quickly from Israel. So what areas do you think The Foreword has a kind of, I don't know how to describe this exactly, competitive advantage in covering?
It's a good question. I think that The Foreword's kind of value proposition and mandate is to tell the American Jewish story. And I see the sort of mantra as what American Jews are talking about. I think we want to make sure that that conversation is guided and steered by really high quality, ambitious journalism, and also that it is the home of civil discourse, particularly about things like Israel, but not only Israel, that do divide us, and that increasingly the conversations in the American Jewish world around things like Israel have really become sort of toxic and separate and not respectful. And so I think where The Foreword can move and really help the Jewish world is by creating that platform, that civility, that engagement, but also putting into those conversations really true stories and broad stories, stories that come from a variety of different perspectives, that treat all those perspectives and those subjects fairly, and that is very full and detailed and thorough and is not part of the story. I do think that, especially on the Israel question, we increasingly see people kind of consuming, there's sort of a massive filter bubble around journalism and news out of Israel, out of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. This is now mirrored a little bit in American politics, but the polarization and the kind of entrenchment of people's identity and narratives in connection with what they read, what they care about, how they see that conflict, I think is really dangerous. And I think we have to really push ourselves to make space to see different people's perspectives and experiences that engage them.
So maybe even a more difficult question. Do you think that The Forward has been doing that recently, particularly in Israel coverage?
I feel like I need to punt that question. I mean, I'm a
not that it's your responsibility. I'm just asking.
No, it's just that, I mean, I've been an occasional reader of The Forward, and obviously a slightly more committed one or frequent one in the last couple of months that I've been thinking about this. But I don't feel like I have the encyclopedic knowledge of what The Forward or other Jewish publications have been doing around Israel or other stories for the last 6 months or 6 years. And I just feel like I'm not qualified to answer that question.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about the, it's been published, the financial challenges that face really any publication today, but in particular face The Forward now.
Yeah, I mean, The Forward, as the CEO and publisher Rachel Fishman Feddersen has spoken about publicly, was in pretty dire financial straits, really bleeding money. She was hired 3 years ago or so to turn that around, and she has made significant strides in doing that. It's not a problem that's solved, but it's the place is on steady footing now. I think she and the board and other staff members made a bunch of really difficult choices that I think will prove out. I hope when we look back a year from now, we'll be very clear, were brave and bold choices that are going to allow The Forward to become its best self for this moment. And I think that, you know, soon it will all look incredibly smart. There's a really important challenge and opportunity and sort of conversation going on right now in the journalism world about, you know, finding the sustainable model for digital news and digital journalism. The New York Times and a handful of other national publications have kind of, you know, found a sustainable model in the subscription business, and I think that's awesome. But there's a real crisis going on in local journalism and in more narrow, however you want to define where The Forward fits in, identity-based journalism, that we don't know yet what the sustainable model is. And that's both a business model and a journalism model. I think we have to understand both what people, what readers need and want, and what they will, how they will sustain it. How do we deliver it? How do we shape it? And how do we pay for it? I'm excited that the Forward is a nonprofit. I think the nonprofit sector of the journalism world has been thriving and growing, and there's a lot of energy around that, whether that's ProPublica or the Marshall Project or the New American Journalism Project. And I think the Forward is going to, you know, join in that world with the support of Craig Newmark and others. I think we want to make sure that funders and readers both understand that good quality journalism, fair-minded, open journalism, and platforms for discussion are essential pillars of democracy and of community, and that people who care about those things are going to want to support news institutions, journalism institutions, conversation platforms in the same way that they support things that you know, connect the people in their community in other ways, whether it's a daycare center or the theater or after school violin lessons for inner city schools or whatever it might be. I feel like we need to keep making the case and proving the case that journalism is a thing that our communities really need.
The Forward has also been to some degree a little bit New York focused. Not a big surprise. There's 2 million Jews in the New York metropolitan area. Do you think it's too much focused on that?
I don't. I'm going to punt on that on the looking backward part. But
okay, how about the going forward part?
From today, we want to continue to build to be a real national news organization and international to some extent. But I think essentially we want to be both about and for all American Jews, and that's going to mean many more stories and events and other things out in the country and every place where Jews are and where people are talking about Jewish subjects. We want to be a part of that. So, I do think that the New York home of the Forward, particularly in its kind of storied history and at the turn of the century, when it was this incredibly important organ for the assimilation of new immigrants to New York in particular, that is a cornerstone of its history, and I think is a very special part of its history. But that's not really the whole American Jewish story today. So we're going to, be in California and Texas and Atlanta and Ohio and Arizona and all the places where the Jewish conversation is happening.
What's your preference? What's your favorite part of Jewish news? You've written about so many different kinds of issues at the Times, and a lot of them were, Jewish subjects or Jewish individuals. What area interests you the most?
Another great question. I mean, look, my primary, I've had a very varied journalism career. I've had 9 or 10 jobs just here at the New York Times. The two things I would say I've done that are like most at all connected to this in terms of content I was a Jerusalem bureau chief for almost 4 years, so I have a lot of experience covering Israel and the Palestinian conflict. And then before that, I did do occasional stories about Jewish subjects, and I always used to work on Christmas when I was a young reporter, so often that story was about, whatever Jews were doing on Christmas. So this, to some extent, this news map is somewhat new to me. I have not been super engaged in covering Jewish life or Jewish organizations. So I'm going to have a big learning curve there. Luckily, we have a staff of people who are excellent at that. Do I have a good answer on this? I don't know. I feel like I'm really interested in politics and education, and I think each of those has a really important Jewish component or Jewish layer to that. I think the question of Jewish relationships with other identity groups, whether they're minority groups or not, is important. I feel like the question of like institutional Judaism is kind of up for grabs, and really everything about like women in Judaism is interesting to me. I don't know. I'm all over the map on it.
I think that's a great answer. It's probably a nice broad perspective on someone who's the editor, incoming editor of the Forward.
I mean, I think even defining what is Jewish journalism and who are the Jews is really up for grabs. And there are a bunch of not publications necessarily, but Jewish organizations and institutions that I think are really trying to broaden that definition and connect to people who identify as Jewish in any way or are interested in Judaism in any way. And I think that's a really exciting space to be in and to think about, especially sort of intellectual life and cultural life and food and how people, connect themselves and their Jewish identity to those topics, I think will be really exciting. I hope we'll be able to really push forward into some of that. Oops, I said forward.
I hope so too.
As a rabbi who spends a lot of time talking about and thinking about Jewish identity in 2019, be fascinating to see that area expand. I think it just can't help but expand because of the nature of the Jewish community in America today.
Yeah.
I want you to tell us the story that you told me offline about your last name.
Sure. So after my husband and I got married, we decided to combine our last names. We were, facing the dilemma that everyone faces about whether to
hyphenate or keep one or keep the other. Or
hyphenate. We really couldn't hyphenate. We realized that Will Gorin hyphen Ruderman, which would have been an option, would not fit on a baseball jersey.
Completely impossible.
Practical.
How do you write that on a lunch sack at the
Yeah. So we decided to actually create a new name. We went through a lot of permutations. One of the things I proposed that we didn't end up doing was that we transliterate our names into Hebrew, do a little anagram out of those letters, come up with some Hebrew word, translate it back to English,
that all seemed a little too complicated. So what we ended up doing was taking the first three letters of his last name, R-U-G, the last four of mine, O-R-E-N, and created a new name. And so he and I and our children, our twins, are the only four Rudorans in the world. There is a little island off the coast of Finland that is called Rudoran, although I don't know if you pronounce it that way. It's a tiny place,
but you
no
should you should pronounce
water.
You should pronounce it that way. Actually,
they
I think we
will pronounce
that.
It that way.
That's
when
correct.
We go there
absolutely.
And reclaim it as our ancestral homeland. So
yes.
That's our long term retirement plan after we built the Forward into a international force.
Of course, I should say you'll that'll be the European headquarters of the Forward for taking over Scandinavia. You'll need
apparently
to,
it's only accessible in the summer, so it'll just be the European headquarters in the summer.
But it's probably frozen, but you kind of only want to be there in the summer anyway. So I'm going to invite our listeners and future Forward readers to come up with a flag for the Rudorans to claim their island. And we'll have a contest, and whoever wins, you will be the ones to plant it.
That would be fantastic. We would love your listeners' help.
Where can people go to find out more about you? And, of course, maybe the most important question, how can they subscribe to the online version of the Forward?
Well, you can always go to forward.com, and there you can also sign up for our email and get newsletters delivered to you every morning, and there's a Shabbat newsletter and some other newsletters that you can sign up for, and that's probably the best way to keep in touch with what we're doing. You can follow me on Twitter, it's at Rudoran, or on Facebook, Jody Rudoran, and I hope to come back on the podcast, on the radio show, and tell you more about what we're doing once we started doing that.
Jody, thank you so much, and great success at the Forward. I think it's such an important part of Jewish life in America, and I hope it only continues to succeed and develop in its online presence.
Thank you so much.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish for this 17th anniversary. I'm Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Too Jewish will be Rachel Kadish, award-winning author of The Weight of Ink. Our playout this morning comes from the Hal Prince-produced musical Fiddler on the Roof in honor of our anniversary today, L'Chaim. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week we pray of peace.
To life, L'Chaim. L'Chaim, L'Chaim, to life. Here's to the father I try to be.
Here's to my bride-to-be.
Drink L'Chaim, to life, L'Chaim. L'Chaim, L'Chaim, to life. Life has a way of confusing us,
blessing and bruising us.
Drink L'Chaim to life. God would like us to be joyful, even when our hearts lie panting on the floor.
How much more can we be joyful when there's really something to be joyful for?
To life, L'Chaim. To title my daughter,
my wife. It gives you something to think about,
something to drink about. Drink L'Chaim to life.
Le Morcha.
Yes, Le Zewa.
Drinks for everybody.
What's the occasion?
I'm taking myself a bride.
Who is it?
Tevye's eldest psyche.
To Le Zewa.
To Tevye.
To title your daughter.
My wife.
May all your futures be pleasant once, not like our present ones. L'Chaim to life, L'Chaim.
L'Chaim,
L'Chaim, L'Chaim to life. It takes a wedding to make us say, let's live another.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.